Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of season 2 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. Hello, my name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. Welcome to the show. If this is the first time you've listened to the Engaging Internal Comms podcast, you're more than welcome. You will find many other episodes on our website and on iTunes if you've not already had a chance to catch up with them. Next week, we are going to have one of our much promised mini episodes. So what I said at the beginning of this series or season was that we were going to alternate our have a fortnightly interview, which is what today's show is. You'll find out about the interview today in a moment. But those are going to be operating on a fortnightly basis, unlike last year when we were doing weekly interviews. And then what I said was potentially between those fortnightly interview episodes, I may do a shorter mini episode just with me. So you'd be stuck with me for a relatively short period of time. And we've got one of those coming up next week. So episode 5 next week, I'm going to be talking about a resource that we have, a really simple resource that you can use to help you to just reflect on what brings meaning to people at your work, whether that's a public sector or private sector organization. We're going to be providing you with that connection to that resource, and I'll just give you a quick 5-minute overview of what it is and how you can use it. So that's just a little bit of something we're going to be doing to keeping in touch and keeping the episodes going out, but also an offer for you to just be able to get hold of something that you might find useful in your work as an employee engager or internal communicator. So that's coming up next week, you'll be able to get that again. Just it'll be downloadable as usual through iTunes or from our website, wherever you normally listen to the show. If you're not already on our mailing list, why not? You should be. I would love you to be on our mailing list. So if you go to engagingic.com, you can find a link there where you can sign up. And that just means you get advance notice of what's coming up next week. But also, we just email you on the day the show comes out, just to remind you that it's there, and in case you've not spotted it already in your list of podcasts. One thing we'd really love is if you could share this podcast with someone else who you think might find it useful. I think today's interview is particularly one of those where you will be hopefully thinking, oh, I know somebody would really benefit from that. So if you could, you can share it either via our website. We're on there, you'll find some links where you can share it that way, or you can obviously share it via iTunes. There's a way there. You've got a little link at the side of it to just share that with someone else who might be interested. If you just share that with one other person who you think might be interested, and everybody did that, we would really help us in terms of growing this community of listenership that we've got. And on that note, if you've got any feedback or anything you'd like us to cover in future episodes, I'm always on the lookout for topics that people are particularly interested in, and that's where today's interview actually came from, one of those suggestions. And if you do leave us some feedback, sorry, I know I'm asking you lots of things here, so don't send this to a friend, this show to a friend who you might think might be interested. Give us a bit of let us know what you want to know more about via the website via the website. But also, if you could leave us a review, that would be absolutely brilliant. And if you do leave us a review, what I'm going to start doing in the future is anybody who leaves us a review on iTunes or any other platform, what I'll do is, if you want it, of course, I'll give you a little shout out on the show just to say thank you very much, and maybe read out your review for us. I'll read out all reviews, even the nasty ones, but hopefully you won't give us a nasty review. Okay, so that is all I've got to say for today, and I'm going to shut up now and let you listen to today's interview, which is an absolute belter, if you don't mind me saying. It goes without saying that more and more organizations are now using platforms like Yammer, like Workplace by Facebook, and Microsoft Teams for collaboration within their organization. And we are hearing more and more people talking about that and how that's an essential part of the way they're doing business, not just because of COVID, but as a general collaboration platform before pre-COVID as well. But one of the things is, how do you measure that? It's very easy to measure some superficial measures like likes and how many people have shared particular articles, but is it really generating a conversation within the business? at the big picture, people, one of the things we passionately believe in is that change within organizations starts when, through conversations. It's when people interact with each other. It's when people have those conversations about our future, our direction, our strategies, our values, that that's where the real change happens. But how do you do that on a social media or a social media-like platform like Yammer or like Workplace for Facebook? And how do you measure it? And what are some of the things that you and your executives can be doing in order to promote that conversation and that collaboration? So that was an area that I wanted to explore. Is there a way to measure that? And if you can measure it, what is that analysis telling us that we should be doing or could be doing in order to facilitate a conversation rather than a one-way flow of information through these platforms? And that's what today's interview is all about. And I think you'll find it extremely useful. I really enjoyed the conversation. So my interviewee today is Kai Kerr, who is the co-founder and CEO of Swoop Analytics. Swoop is a leading enterprise social network analytics platform that uses data from Microsoft Yammer and Workplace by Facebook to help organizations and their people become better collaborators. Kai has been involved in improving business relationships using social network analysis since 2006. Kai is also involved in the Danish Chamber of Commerce in Australia. So hello, Kai, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Fantastic. So I guess that last point begs the question, where are you based? Because it's Danish Chamber of Commerce and in Australia. So do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about where you reside? And I guess at the moment it's kind of slightly different given we're in the middle of a pandemic and nobody can move. But where are you based, Kai?
Well, normally home is Sydney in Australia. It took me 30 years to figure out that winter is optional. So for all your listeners in the Northern Hemisphere, you don't have to freeze. There's a warmer place on Earth. So I moved there in my early 30s. But right now, for the next 12 months, I'll be based out of Copenhagen.
And that's in Denmark, yeah?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Sorry, in Copenhagen. Yeah, of course, Copenhagen's in Denmark. Sorry. Absolutely. So Swoop, I mentioned a little bit about what Swoop Analytics does, but do you want to tell the listeners a little bit more about what the business is and size of the business and the kind of clients that you're working with at the moment?
Absolutely. Swoop was formed about 6 years ago, and our mission is to help people and companies and individuals become better at collaborating. So we have a very strong passion to help people become a bit at collaborating. And it started for me more than 20 years ago when I ended up, I'm actually a lawyer by background, but I ended up working in a really big IT company running the knowledge management function. You know, it was called KM back in, you might remember that, back in the late 90s. That was a big
thing.
And it was when there was a surge in interest around communities of practice, intellectual capital, and all those things around how do we get people to connect and collaborate and share knowledge. And I got really, really interested in that. And fast forward to 2006, we thought that rather than running around and asking people in surveys who they talk with and interact with to get work done, that maybe we should start to just look at whether there's, like, you can analyze the digital exhaust from various collaboration platforms. And we actually got contacted by Microsoft, who said, we got this Yammer thing, you know, but we can't really, it's challenging for us to demonstrate that people have actually become better at collaborating after we implemented Yammer. So we started with Yammer as a sort of proof of concept. We then expanded that to Workplace from Facebook. And now we're also looking at Microsoft Teams, which is, you know, the new weaponry, if you like, in the Office 365 collaboration suite.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, right. Well, and you said 2006. I mean, I'm trying to think back to 2006. I guess, you know, this is kind of pre, I guess Facebook was around then, wasn't it? But obviously you were talking about business platforms here. What sort of platforms were being used back in, or was this kind of, evolved into this?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I think Swoop was 2016. Sorry.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. But yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. I was thinking 2006.
Yeah. No,
I remember kind of Stone Age. Slate and a kind of a chalk and that sort of thing. It wasn't that quite that bad, but no. Okay, no, that's great. And I mean, I guess that kind of leads into what I was going to talk to you about next, which is, you know, I think we met and we kind of connected immediately because we kind of got this common view of the world. And one of the views that we, you know, we have at the big picture people is that, you know, change really happens when people start having those conversations, and that, you know, communicators within organizations should be focusing more on creating the opportunity for conversations and dialogue rather than just download. And I think we both kind of recognize that there is a temptation sometimes to fall into broadcast mode. And I guess, you know, I'm holding my hand up there as from a business perspective, as we fall into this trap as well of using social media sometimes just to sort of soapbox to shout about things rather than actually engaging in conversations. So, I mean, do you want to just say a little bit more about that? Because I think it's interesting to look at it from that perspective, because we're not, and we'll go on to talk about this in more detail, we're not just looking at sort of passive metrics here. We are looking for active triggers and of engagement and of collaboration and communication and connectivity. So do you want to just say a little bit more about your, you know, maybe not necessarily the technology behind it, but more about kind of your worldview on that? Because
I think there's a whole philosophy almost and a way of thinking around this. When our customers come to us, they typically have one of several problems, but often what stands out is the there's a real interest from employees to have a better connection with the leadership team and have better connection with colleagues in other parts of the world, or just other parts of the business, and they often stress this need to have conversation. You know, it's about having a two-way conversation. So people are used to the one-way broadcasting, as you mentioned, but how do we establish an authentic line of engagement between, for instance, the CEO and the front line? Mm. And that has historically been really, really difficult to do that. If you think about town halls and, you know, and physically getting people together. And of course, with the pandemic, it's all impossible to get together.
Yeah.
So there's this deep rooted requirement to establish a conversational tone. And I think it also means that we sort of, you know, we've seen not the hierarchies breaking up, but I think we're seeing the limitations of purely hierarchical organized companies, and this need to have much more self-managed teams, knowledge flowing much more freely, much faster to deal with a rapid changing business environment. And only when you foster not just a culture, but platforms that allow people to do that, are you really going to address the challenges that are ahead of us. So people come to us with that in mind, and then, well, how do we then help them? How do we help them? Not in swoop with the technology. There are lots of technologies that allows us to enable us to do that. But how do we help shift people's behaviors? Because as you said, it's almost a knee-jerk reaction to say, oh, you know, when you go on LinkedIn or Twitter, oh, this is what I'm doing today, and then a photo or something like that. And we don't really think much about how we establish a conversation. And there are some things that little, you know, changes in our behavior that we would normally do face to face that we just forget about doing online. So I guess what our customers are saying, well, how do we measure this? How do we measure that we've actually established that conversational tone? How do we, on earth, do we prove to anyone that these platforms have created a closer connectivity between the leadership and the front line? And how do we show that, you know, the research and development team in Singapore is now actually talking to the salespeople in London?
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll come on to that in a moment about what are some of those, you know, kind of, you know, I know you've done a lot of benchmarking there, and we'll talk about that in a minute. No, I think that's really interesting. I was listening to another podcast this morning, and this kind of really resonated with me, is that we've, you know, in the last 9 months, we've probably done 10 years worth of change. And I think it's true, isn't it? When you think of how much we've, you know, for all the bad things that have happened over the last 9 months or so, you know, we've had one of those kind of seismic shifts that history will look back on as like a kind of real rift in the way we work and the way we collaborate, and that we, you know, I think the ripples will, you know, regardless of the kind of pandemic itself, I think that the way we've reevaluated who we are and what we do and how we work is going to be a massive change. I know everybody's talking about it, and it's kind of nothing new, but it just sort of hit me, you know. Yeah, you know, it would probably normally taken about 10 years for what's happened in the last 9 months normally to have evolved over its natural course.
Yes. Certainly that shift from it's being optional to work in a distributed way. It's been optional for leaders to engage with people online. That has just totally changed.
Yeah.
And if you as a senior leader want to engage your people, you can't just send out an email and then say, "Oh, I'll catch them all at the annual retreat," or or "We'll see them at the roadshow." Those things aren't there. And the feedback we're getting is that leaders are really getting their eyes up for how effective these channels can be to establish a conversational tone at scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the real powerful thing is what these tools and the opportunities that this creates for all of us.
Yeah, yeah. We've kind of alluded to this already, but I mean, and you mentioned it, is that, collaboration, happened pre Yammer and Facebook, workplace by Facebook. We live in a world where, collaboration has been essentially critical to business and in a non-digital world. But I guess as you said, it's how do you measure that? It's very much round observation, maybe the, annual sort of our biannual survey and that sort of thing. And to a large extent by intuition. And I guess whilst digitization and digital communications offers, clearly there's something there that can be, you can measure that ebb and flow of communication. I guess, and we talked about this a little bit when we spoke originally, was there's also the danger of unintended consequences. Sometimes when you put that ability to measure, and measure everything and draw conclusions from that. So I guess, just before we go into some of that benchmarking that you've done about what are kind of some of the more human elements that we can kind of be looking to target to improve that. And then obviously your sort of approach helps measure that. What are the dangers around, measuring every click, every share, every like, every whatever it is that people are, whatever platform they're on? What are your thoughts on that, Kai?
Yeah, absolutely. There were actually also risks before we started to measure things online, because if you do an employee engagement survey and you only do it once a year, it's a snapshot. The sentiment could have changed a month later, but you're still rolling out all the focus groups and the workshops and the action plans based on old data. So there's also a risk with that, right? So there's always a risk when you use data, and you certainly have to have a really open mind and think about what you're doing. I'll give you an example. We looked at a situation where this particular collaboration platform had a really, really high use. Lots of people were using it, lots of messages being posted. And you could look at that and go, "This is fantastic. It's working. Look, we have so many active people and so many messages posted." But when you look at how people interact with each other, there weren't a lot of what we call two-way interactions. So that's, that's Craig, where I post something and you reply. And if you post something, then I reply. That's a two-way interaction. But in this case, there were just lots of one-way interactions. So yeah, people were using it, but they weren't talking to each other. They were more like shouting from the rooftop, with no one listening. So you really got to be careful about what you measure to make sure you come up with insights that are obviously actionable and that are accurate. So that's one thing. The other thing I think we also have to be very conscious of is this whole thing about, Big Brother's watching and what are those people, up in head office doing, and I'm feeling monitored. And I think there's a real risk that we have to ensure that these things are not being used for bad things.
Yeah.
I think here in particularly, and I guess I mentioned I'm Danish originally, I think. And one thing I'm kind of proud of what you've achieved in Europe is this focus on data privacy and the whole GDPR thing. While it can be cumbersome and puts a lot of restrictions in place, what it does do, it forces everyone to have a really good think about whether or not what we're doing is it ethical? Is it the right way we're doing it? Having data privacy officers to look at this, and everything we do go through these sort of checks and balances to ensure that this is something that we are all comfortable with. Yeah. And I think particularly in the kind of the industry that we're in, we have to build in enough choice that we can allow people to make the adjustments that suits the culture and the requirements of a particular organization or particular jurisdiction that you operate in. And as I'm sure you and your listeners would know, there's even within Europe, there's a big difference in the cultural view on what you should and shouldn't do. And if you get it outside of Europe, you know, there's certainly we see a big difference in my home country of Australia. Has probably a more, I would say, that's kind of, we can see the positive, let's do it. And I think if you look at there's certain countries in Europe, and I think we can probably, without offending anyone, mentioned Germany in particular, and probably to some extent also France, where there's a lot more reluctance. And I think as long as you go through the pre-work of engaging with the right people, you're doing it with the right reason, and by the way, it's under whatever regulation or rules that apply within an organization, as long as it sort of obeys those rules, then I think we should have enough space yet to really deliver some fantastic organization outcomes.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair enough, and I think it's a good point to make. I hadn't thought about that, but also I think if people know, it means, we're doing it so we can communicate more effectively with you and you can communicate more effectively with us. It's not so we're going to be, tracking individuals as to how engaged they are. I think, I understand that. And I know it was interesting what you were saying there as well about, going back to about that idea that people do use clicks and shares and as measures as I think it's Mark Twain, the old statement of the biggest problem with communication is the illusion that it's taken place. And I think that's, I think sometimes with that sort of having that data to hand that, so look how many people have opened this email, great, but how many people have changed their behavior after reading it or have done, what action has it triggered? And also have they engaged with it and then entered into a conversation? And I think,
Well, I should also add that some of the metrics that we are often being asked about, which I actually, to be brutally honest, and I'm just about to say, don't say this to anyone, but this is being recorded, obviously. But there's a lot of communications people, I think, that are being instructed from their internal customers, which is typically very senior people, to focus on how many likes they get. And now that can be appropriate for external social media, where what you're looking for is just reach, and you want to announce a new product or a new feature or something, and you want to get reach, and reach you get through likes. But inside the company, once you are inside the boundary of the company, all the feedback we're getting from employees is that what they want is to have two-way conversation. So therefore, the thing you should not really be measuring, if you like, is likes, but it's actually the conversation, it's the post and the replies. Who's engaged in that? Who are the opinion leaders? Who talks about this? How is the conversation going? How healthy is the conversation from an interaction perspective? It's actually a lot more important than looking at likes. So
definitely,
I do think that it comes back to this: and why are we measuring this, and what do we want to achieve? And not getting bamboozled with all these numbers, because I think all of us providing analytics, we have more numbers coming out of our platforms than you could ever dream of. They're not. That's not the problem. The problem is what you do with it, making meaningful, and then take action.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a nice segue then onto what I wanted to ask you next, which I know that you at Swoop, you've done some really interesting benchmarking. And, I found this fascinating when we were talking about, the whole etiquette of human interaction and how that, in a face-to-face context and how that transfers or what the parallels are with an online, whether it's Yammer or workplace by Facebook or Microsoft Teams. So I think it'd be really nice if we could maybe share some of those things that you found through your research and your work that actually are ways of doing what we've been talking about, of getting away from a kind of one-way transmission and into a kind of a two-way flow of communication. So I'll hand over to you to sort of run through what those lessons are, and I'll ask you a few questions as we go.
Absolutely. So I think if you start with the question, what can we do to ensure that in our organization we have good, strong conversations? And you think about, well, how would you measure that? Rather than just thinking about from what the IT people would do, like what's the uptime, and if the platform is up and running, then we're successful.
So
you see the very different approach you take. So we take the same from our benchmarking, and we say, well, what are the signals that will tell us whether organizations are having strong conversations? So you'd want to look at, for instance, you know, how many posts get a reply. I'll give an example of why this is a bit of a ratio. This is a good rule of thumb for all of your listeners, just to think about. You don't need analytics to do this, but we've been able to derive at a rule that we call the 1-2-3 rule. And what the 1-2-3 rule really means is that when you are interacting online, you need to have a balance in your conversations. And by balance, I mean, whenever you're doing one post, make sure you do two replies and three likes. So that's the 1-2-3 rule. One post, two replies, three likes. And the reason for that is, you can, Craig, imagine someone, and literally it could be you, it could be me. And we look at how much you've been on Workplace or on Yammer or Teams, and we can see that you're always posting, but you never reply. And you're going to think, well, what if you think about what that would look like in a room where you had eight of your best friends over, and you know, Craig has just come back from his ski holiday when we could do that in Switzerland, you know, we're sitting around the dining table, and then we set Craig off on his monologue about his ski, you know, experience in Switzerland. And after half an hour, we're all going, when is it our turn to talk, you know? And unfortunately, we actually do see that. And oftentimes we see with senior leaders that see these platforms as a way of broadcasting. So obviously, don't just do posting. Whenever you're posting, you also reply. And why is it important to reply? Because that's where the conversation comes into place. And we say you've got to have twice as many replies as you have posts to have that balanced conversation.
Yeah.
And then the reason why we suggest likes is actually, you know, when you're in a room and you're talking to other people, you will have eye contact and you can see someone nodding, or, you know, you can see. So you can just see their body language. Body language does not exist in a collaboration platform. It's not there. So the only way you can show someone without replying that you are actually there is by clicking like. It's a really, really important signal. And it's so easy to do, right? You just click the like button. But if shown the recipient or the person who posted that, you know, Craig was there, he's paying attention. And that's very stimulating for discussion.
And I like that because it reminds me of something I was taught very early in my management training career when I was, you know, when I used to manage people, which is, you know, some, imagine I'm pointing to my mouth and my ears. You've got one of these and two of these. You use them in that ratio. And it's not dissimilar, is it? Because replying shows that you've listened and you're then, you know, either demonstrating that you've listened or you are taking the conversation to the next level. And that just raises another question in my mind, Kai, which is, it's the quality of the reply. Is there anything, and I know that's probably more difficult to measure in terms of, you know, great or lol, or, you know, I'm something that's a little bit more substantive than that. And is there, have you done any, is that something you've looked at as well? Or is that maybe off piece?
No, well, it's a really good question, you know, and I think that's probably at least where the technology is at the moment, is where we have to say, well, I don't think AI is quite there to really ask whether that was a good answer or not. But what I can tell you, and I'm sure that your listeners will appreciate this from their own organizations, once we know that it's Kai posting again another silly question, I'm not going to bother and waste my time on responding, you know. So I think over time you'll very quickly. It manages itself, you know. It's people who don't provide any meaningful content will simply not get a reply.
Dry up, yeah.
And I think that's actually why it's so important to look at that balance. You know, if I'm always posting and I never get a reply, well, is that because my content isn't actually useful? And you know, the funny thing, Craig, is that when we started in Swoop Analytics, and we have these, we call them Swoop personas, which is it's kind of a very lightweight behavioral profiling of the way that you interact with people. And so an engager is really the best one. Like that's the one when we look at the research and how describe what, you know, the best sort of online conversations are, they're balanced, and an engager is someone who has a balance in conversations. So I wanted to be, of course, on our own collaboration platform, I wanted to be an engager. And I came out as what we call a broadcaster, which is someone that's
right. Right?
And, and so I call our chief scientist, Dr. Lawrence Lockley, who's an old friend of mine, a co-founder of Swoop as well. And I said, hey, Laurie, you know, I'm posting all these fantastic things. And like, you're a co-founder, you know, can you go in and, you know, why aren't you replying? You know, kind of like, what's wrong with you? You're like, I'm being collaborative. You know, why are you being antisocial, not collaborating? So obviously I was pointing everything I could at him and saying, Laurie, this is your problem. And then Laurie, he just said to me, he said, well, Kyle, that's an interesting question. Have you thought about what you're publishing? And I went,
yeah.
What do you mean? He said, well, just have a think about it. And I went back and I looked at it and thought, well, okay. So I put this link up to a Harvard Business Review article or something, you know, just without no context or anything. Just say, hey, I read this article. You know, what do you think? And I had this really strong lesson around thinking about what I put up and then make it very clear what I want other people to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And make it easy for other people to respond to me. And that has, so the other thing that's come out of the benchmarking is that what we found is that when you post a question, you get twice as many replies as when you don't.
Yeah.
And there's a big variety. For those that are interested in reading more about this, we do some sort of pretty big sort of pieces of research around this. And we looked at thousands and thousands of thousands of messages and people and to see what's the distribution of people who ask lots of questions and who never ask questions. And there are actually people who are very active and never, ever ask a question. Mm. And it goes from 0% of your messages have a question mark to about 25% of your messages have a question mark. It's such a big variance. And of course, if you're listening to this, you know, hopefully we can get some of your listeners to go, oh, maybe I should go back and see, you know, these platforms, have I actually asked anything, you know, recently, like a genuine real question? There's a CEO, or he's no longer there. He was the CEO for a large Australian telco. And he posted the question, the nuts of it was really, what are the top 10 dumbest things we're doing in our company? You know, and that thread had 800 or 900 replies. It was a really good question. You know, what are we just not very smart at? What could we do better? And it was aimed at everyone. And I just think those kind of questions, where the executive team really have no visibility of what's happening on the front line because they're so far removed from, you know, from where work is executed that might touch a customer. If you ask the question, you know, what have you seen that our competitors do? What does our competitors' products do that we should do better? What's the service like when you go into one of our competitors' stores? You know, what do you really like when you see this? And feed that back. Those kind of questions are easy for staff to answer. And when they come from the top, we've given, you know, psychological safety for people to engage with the senior leaders. And I think that's really why it's so important that the senior leaders think a lot more about starting the conversations than just issuing these broadcasts from the top.
That's really interesting. I mean, I've got a really guilty look on my face at the moment because I mean, what you're saying there applies to, you know, good social media management from a marketing perspective, you know, so we use LinkedIn quite a lot, and I'm very guilty of broadcasting and not asking questions. And I know I get far more engagement when I ask a question because it's natural to want to, you know, people want to, in some cases, show they know what the answer is and be able to demonstrate their, you know, their capability or knowledge, but also people like to be provoked into that position. So I totally agree with you. And I know LinkedIn will always promote or will favor where there's been interaction and people have responded, that, you know, just broadcast where loads of people have liked or they never really show up. But also I know from experience, but I very rarely ask questions myself, so I'm really kind of very guilty look on my face. Just one question I've got around that though, which is and this isn't, I totally agree with you, I completely agree with you, but is there a kind of a sort of, not a but a watch out about asking questions that you can't satisfy, you know, as in, you know, what would be a great wage to pay everyone in the business? And everybody comes like, you know, with a, like a big wish list, and you go, oh my God, what have we done here? We've like opened the, let the genie out of the bottle, as it were. I guess there's yes, ask questions, but make sure you can give meaningful replies, or that whatever people might come back with, you can manage that expectation, I guess. And that's no different to any, you know, just being a good manager.
You would be, I mean, the worst thing you could do was to ask a question and then not engage with people and not being really wanting an answer. I mean, that'll be the last time people will ever respond to you if you do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's no different to normal life, is it? You know, with the employee survey where, you know, we asked you what your three biggest issues were and we kind of just pretended they weren't there and went and did something completely different.
Yeah, we didn't like the answer.
Yeah.
I have also seen... I should point out, we're not consultants. We purely are, we operate this very, very sort of insightful X-ray machine, but all we look at, we just look at the data and then provide, if you like, the insights through the dashboard. So all I'm saying in terms of, you know, any advice you might pick up between the lines is not based on us being consultants. Just based on our own experience. But when we do talk to customers, particularly around this thing about asking questions, what I see is that, you know, the smart executives always team up with the with their communications or advisor, and then they do this together. So any replies or any questions that come in or comments that come back, it could potentially be overwhelming if you get 900 replies. You know that you've got to have a team behind you that can help sift through that and bring to your attention so that it can still be a very manageable experience. And I've seen people time box that and say, you know, like I will consider any answers that come in the next 2 days. But after that, you know, we're either closing the conversation or, you know, don't expect an answer. And I think as long as you set those parameters around it, I've seen some people saying, you know, we're having an online discussion for the next hour. And that's it. And then I'm online and I'll engage with you. And after that, I can't. So I think you can really easily, as you do with many other things, you set some parameters. If you overbought the parameters up front, you're not going to disappoint anyone.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's expectation management. I mean, I guess a parallel would be, you know, the kind of company ideas scheme, which is, you know, put your ideas in a box and before you know it, you've kind of got more than you can handle and you're kind of trying to manage the risk of disappointing people and actually disengaging them. And, you know, where I've seen that work well is where we say we're going to have an idea scheme, but this is how the idea scheme work is. You come up with the idea, but you don't just give it to someone else to sort out. You come up with a proposal as to how you could help implement it as well. So it's kind of some personal responsibility. So, you know, again, and without making it too complicated, I think it's like, it's the culture of the organization, isn't it? Where if it's kind of really parental and, you know, the senior managers do everything for us and cosset us, or are we kind of all adults here and the senior managers just have different job to us and a different job title and different responsibilities, but we're all actually responsible for making things happen. But they can facilitate things because they're where they are, rather than, you know, they've got access to some of the resources that we may not have. So our role is there to, as senior managers, to be facilitators rather than, you know, kind of nurturing everything and give us your problems and we'll sort them out for you, which I think some organizations still have a bit of a legacy. What are the benchmarking data? Because I think you said there you're not consultants, but I think these insights are fascinating because I think, you know, I think, you know, if you can analyze stuff, that's great. But then if you can kind of say, well, and here's some of the things we've found, I think that's really valuable. What are some of the other insights that you've discovered through this benchmark?
So, there's a lot of interest, for instance, in Microsoft Teams at the moment. And I'm sure that a lot of people that are sort of going, what is supposed to be used that for? And that looks, isn't that what we're using Workplace for? Isn't that what we're using Yammer for? You know, how do we do that? So one of the things that I guess we did with, we done the first benchmark of Microsoft Teams, which is back in March, April, May last year, we published the first one. We have a second one coming out here in, it'll probably be early April this year. What we found last year, we had about 9,000 Teams who looked at in the report from last year. And one thing that surprised me was that by far most of the teams, the Microsoft Teams, are private. The private teams, and it's a quite small. The average is quite small, four to five or six active people in a team, There's probably the number of members is actually a bigger than that, but typically, yeah, you know, 5 to 6 people being active, and it's typically private. Now, right, if you think about instilling a cross-company enterprise collaboration, and I tell you that, well, 90% of the teams are private and small, you can imagine this whole sort of ocean with tiny little islands that are disconnected.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got no critical mass at all, really.
Yes, exactly. You go, well, hang on, we implemented this thing to enable our people to, you know, explore and find each other and collaborate across the company. And if I told you that, for the ones we looked at in more detail, we can see that all of those teams, but for the vast, vast majority, had team members that came from the same business unit. So, yeah, in a way, while Teams is an awesome collaboration platform, it is actually not generating, you know, if you like, you know, it's not connecting the company, you know, like it's it, so, and that's, if you look at them, a team like Yammer or Workplace, suddenly you find that most of the groups are, well, certainly on Yammer, it's a little bit more mixed on Workplace, but most of the teams are public most of the groups are public and they are much, much bigger. And they're typically from a representative from across the company. So, you obviously need both, right? You need a place where small, cohesive, tight teams come together and execute, and you need somewhere where you can go in and bump into someone. Literally, it's the water cooler. It's the virtual water cooler. There's so many different analogies. I have a colleague who's saying, oh, it's like a school, you know, you've got the classroom where you've got private conversations, but all the interesting stuff that happens in the, you know, in the schoolyard, you know?
That's
where you gossip, and that's where you learn. That's actually almost where you make new friends, is in the schoolyard. And then you go in to get stuff done in the classroom. So you need both. And I guess it's a surprise. It's just, you know, the conversation, the conversations are longer in time on Yammer than they are. They're short on Teams. Even the messages are longer. You know, it's big versus small. It's public versus private. There's some really big differences. So I think if you are an internal communicator, I think Teams is an incredibly powerful platform. But just don't expect that that's where you want to go in and publish content and then it'll reach everyone.
I mean, I guess I've only really, I mean, we're a small organization. So, when I've used Teams, it's really been when a client's used it. We've tended to just use it just as a, you know, a video conferencing platform. But does Teams have that facility for broader, larger scale collaboration? Or is it just that people tend to just huddle up in smaller groups and with their immediate work team and create their little environments that?
You can. I mean, you can create huge teams if you wanted to. But what I'm saying is that, you know, it doesn't, from what we can see, it just doesn't really happen that much.
Doesn't happen that way. Oh, that's interesting.
And I think also, I mean, you've got to love Microsoft because, I mean, you've got to say they are totally committed to collaboration. They're putting out more tools, more features than anyone can dream of, you know, so they're committed to it. But it can also become quite overwhelming. So where you were confused before, choosing between Slack and Zoom and all sorts of, you can get confused within Microsoft 365, right?
I've never found the Microsoft offering particularly, you know, easy to get your head around, you know, and Teams initially confused the hell out of me because I was used to using Zoom, and Zoom had some, you know, had some things that annoyed me, but it generally did everything I needed it to do. But Teams, you had to seem to kind of have lots of different sort of add-ons or.
Yeah, that's maybe true, but I think it's become such an essential, existential part almost of organizations these days. Incredibly powerful tools, but I think you do just have to be very mindful of, if you're an internal communicator, like what are the platforms that that I can use, and you need to know not just what they can do, but actually what are people actually using them for. And we have these benchmarking reports that are freely available that you can hopefully learn from their case studies and numbers about, you know, how they're being used, that hopefully can be useful in sort of just guiding your own sense of, well, what should I use this for? What's the strength of this one? You know, how are people used? Not how they're being sold or how could they be used, but, you know, how are people actually using them?
We'll put a link to that into the show notes, Kai, if I'll remember after we've finished recording to ask you to for that link, and we'll put a link in there. You mentioned Slack there, and one of our previous episodes, I'll put a link in. I can't off the top of my head, I can't remember which episode it was now, but one of our interviewees had used Slack and was using Slack quite successfully, and we use Slack in our business as well. Is that a platform that you may be looking to do some analytics around as well in the future, or can you do that now?
Yeah, up until the Salesforce acquisition, we were a little bit more, I wouldn't say standoffish, but the thing with Slack, I think, is that it's, well, from our perspective, it was pretty much, well, this had a huge following in the startup, and particularly maybe the tech industry, and huge following, and grew then, grew after that. The benefit from us, because we our customers are typically, kind of like the large corporates, UNICEF, the sort of big corporates, I'm allowed to mention names, but you can imagine. So the biggest of the biggest companies that are out there are the ones that we sort of tend to serve. So big enterprise with hundreds of thousands of people or tens of thousands of people. And so we sort of geared up to address that sort of big enterprise marketplace, whereas Slack seems to operate more on the, much smaller. Much smaller organization. So we've sort of always been geared up for actually tackling the big end of town.
That makes sense.
But with Slack's, with Salesforce acquiring Slack, I think we'll probably have to revisit that, because there's now, I guess, more likely that we'll have more, wall-to-wall implementations of Slack. Yeah. I think it's been something that maybe, it started off in IT, and then maybe someone else in the project management team found out, and then it spread. I don't. In terms of wall-to-wall, there are of course some cornerstone clients that Slack have got, but I don't see them having the big enterprise clients that Microsoft
has. That makes sense. Yeah, it's a good tool, and like you say, it works well as a collaboration platform for project management and also for communications. But I guess on a scalable version, for a big organization, we suffer sometimes of a bit of overwhelm and losing track of particular threads, and so I suppose in a big organization that would be magnified. I'm conscious of time, Kai, and one thing I did want to ask you actually, the link to that was, I've always been led to believe from the people I've spoken to in larger organizations that you should, have one platform and do that really well. And I guess my question, the question came around from when you were talking there about Microsoft Teams. And I guess I was thinking there's probably another platform that people are using for that kind of bigger connectivity stuff if they're not using Microsoft Teams. And I guess the danger is there is, as soon as you get people on multiple platforms, stuff gets missed. It's not as, the critical mass starts to wane, and when people are only maybe going in there once a week or twice a week or so, you don't get that momentum. I mean, is that something you found as well through your work? I guess it might be a bit of a rhetorical question, because if you just said there, a lot of organizations, Microsoft Teams or Yammer is the go-to platform. But do you sometimes find that there is a fragmentation and people have got their own kind of little areas where they collaborate for various things, but it's not the official channels? Does that happen as well?
It sounds intuitively right what you're saying, doesn't it? And I would say yes, that's exactly what happens. The more tool, the more fragmentation. And now the only data point I really have on it is when we looked at for a number of our the companies that participate in our benchmarking, we want to look at whether or not, as they introduced Teams, whether their use of Yammer would then drop as well. And it didn't happen.
Okay.
It went the other way. So you sort of go,
That's interesting.
So, all right, does that apply to other tools? I don't know, actually. But I was quite surprised to see that the data is saying that in this case, they were both growing. So maybe we are finding a way where we identify the real unique benefits of these tools that obviously have a high degree of overlapping functionality. But there's something that Slack is really good at, right? You know, maybe it's the integrations that you, oh, I like the way it does this. You can do all the other stuff. It's great in the integration bit. And you go, well, oh, I just love Teams because it's doing this bit really, really well.
Yeah.
And I love Yammer because it's doing that bit really well. And I think maybe we are all becoming, you know, more familiar with when to use what. I think about, you know, the pen, you know, you can argue, well, why do I need a ball pen for when I have my, you know, my, this other pen, or why do I need this one? We found that, well, maybe it's a good thing to have 3 or 4 different pens because one is, you know, one is for this, one's for that. And
yeah,
just found that out over time. And I'm thinking that maybe we're getting a little bit more digitally mature.
It's a good point.
And what to use when.
Yeah, it's a good point. No, I agree. I was probably thinking from the perspective of who I know, because we do it even as a small business is, you know, I can't find that message, or where's that conversation gone that we are having? It was on Slack, wasn't it? Oh, no, I changed it. I started emailing on it. Oh, okay. So then we've now gotten, and I guess it's trying to avoid that. But I think as long as organizations are clear on what channels for what purpose, I think that's probably where the kind of the risk of, you know, multiple conversations about the same thing on different channels is probably not what organizations want. But you, I guess, again, it all links to how formal or informal it is. If it's a big project and we all need to know what's happening, then we probably all need to be going to the same place for it. Whereas if it's more of a conversation about the culture and, you know, values and that sort of thing, that really can happen elsewhere if it's just that kind of connectivity piece, I guess. So,
yeah, I'd agree with that. It's probably a podcast just in its own right to cover
that. Well, maybe that's a good point at which to sort of start to bring things to a conclusion. So I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, and these were maybe kind of summarizing maybe the two things I was going to ask you. One is, you know, I'm a listener listening to this podcast. We're using Yammer, we're using Microsoft Teams, we're using Workplace for Facebook. What tips could you give me to get the most out of that, you know, platform that we're using now? What are maybe, and maybe it's repetition of what we've already just talked about in terms of your benchmarking, but what are some of the, you know, here's two things you can do that would really kind of help you to sort of get a return on that investment of credibility and time and invest, you know, money and et cetera.
So I'll tell you what I do. If I'm talking to you as if your listener is, you know, I'm talking to the individual, not as you strategically as an organization, but what you should do tomorrow, right?
Perfect.
I would say that. So, and if I'm talking to someone who has a senior role or has the ability to influence or impact other people, I would definitely start going in there and asking questions. I would be at mentioning people in that. We know that at mentions give you 76% more replies, and I mentioned asking questions 150% more. As a senior person, I give the psychological safety for people to respond because I've encouraged them to talk back to me. So going in there, finding something that is of real importance for the business and raise that in there and get feedback. If you are genuinely seeking that feedback, because it's only through conversations we can take people with us and generate the change that we're seeking. It doesn't happen through an edict from the top.
So, yeah.
That's what I would suggest.
Perfect. Excellent. And anything, and that's, I think that's plenty on its own. Anything, any other tips, or is I'm sure you've got many more, but that to me is a really golden one, I think.
I would probably, if you look at this from a more strategic perspective, there's a good industry colleague, Carrie Marshall, who has a company called Talk Social to Me. I'm not sure whether she came up with this, but she's the one that I heard this from. And she said, you really got to think about whether your enterprise collaboration platform, you got to think about it as is it a megaphone, or do you see it as a hearing aid?
Yeah.
I think I would certainly like to help shift the thinking of senior leaders and allow our corporate comms colleagues out there to help them shift that thinking, because the way you approach communication is fundamentally different if you look at this channel as a hearing aid as opposed to a megaphone. So just being aware of what do I really want to achieve from this. And I think we need to get away from the megaphone is probably obvious for this, and into the hearing aid. And that means a strategic shift in thinking from how do I help my executive deliver a message to how do I help my executive start a conversation. And it's the positioning of the platform, it's the coaching of them, it's the way that the delivery of the message, not followed up with a full Q&A that's been pre-written, but let the Q&A be generated by the people.
Yeah. Goes back to our one mouth and two ears analogy again, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Well, look, Kai, that has been, I could talk to you literally all afternoon, but we can't. And so, I mean, that's been absolutely brilliant. And there might well be a follow-up. And that I'm going to look up Kerry Marshall there, because I one of the areas, and it kind of overlaps with what we've been talking a bit about today a little bit, is one of the areas I want to look at is this idea of becoming a listening organization and not just a broadcasting organization. So that kind of really resonates with me and what I'm thinking about at the moment. I'm going to put some links in the show notes, and I'll talk about those in a moment with you. But the inevitable thing that you know is coming, which is a question I ask all of my interviewees at the end of the interview, which is something that even people who know you reasonably well, maybe work with you, or you know, maybe not friends and family, maybe they know, but something that you would like to share with us that not a lot of people know about Kai Care. That is broadcastable as well.
What I'm going to tell you is it not even my colleagues know, and this is probably a little bit embarrassing, but it is what it is. I hate peeling small potatoes.
Right, okay.
I have two daughters. They're fortunate they're grown up now. One is 18 and the other one's 28. But when they were little, we had to, you know, they love beets. And so anything kind of small, and small potatoes, as a Danes, we love potatoes. And at Christmas time, you get these small potatoes, you know, and it's up and peeling them. It can stress me out just thinking about it. And I go to my wife and say, I can't do it. And we'd be in the kitchen, and I've got this whole bowl of small potatoes. And I'm not kidding, like my hands would almost cramp up, and I just have to walk away.
So you've got a phobia of small potatoes.
It's not that. It's the peeling.
It's the peeling. Oh, okay.
I just can't stand it. It's embarrassing.
Wow.
It's true.
That's a brilliant thing to tell. I really like that. I really like the idea of. And I trust that's not being kind of too career limiting for you in terms of
the fear
of peeling small potatoes.
It's had an impact on the marriage, and since Marianne is also our COO, I guess it could potentially impact the company as well.
I'm just wondering if there's some sort of psychometric profile that we could invent, which is which vegetable I least like to think about having to process. And then maybe we can come up with a sort of different range of styles of personalities based around Kai is a potato, non-peeling potato. I particularly don't like shelling peas. Sprouts are something that terrifies me. The thought of, yes, no, I love it. I think that's brilliant, Kai. I love the creativity that's gone into that one. So thank you for that. We won't put a link to any small potato jokes in the show notes, but anything I've got three things I was going to share, Kai, and I'd like you to let me know if there's anything else. I think we've already mentioned, added one to that list, which I will. So Twitter, I've got your Kai Care is your, and careful with the spelling of that. I won't going to try and read it out over the airwaves, but it will be on the show notes. I've got the Swoop Analytics website, which is www.swoopanalytics.com. And I've got your personal LinkedIn profile where people can reach out to you. We'll put the link in if it's okay to your benchmarking information.
Absolutely.
Which would be, is there anything else you'd like us to share, or we'll flag up now with the listener who might want to?
There are two documents that we offer for free as well. We're often being asked, what does good look like? You know, like, I'm rolling out Teams, I'm rolling out Yammer, I'm rolling out Workplace. What does good look like? I don't know where to start with this. You know, my boss is asking me, you know, what are we delivering? So on our website, next to the benchmarking reports, there are also these what does good look like, which is basically evidence-based measurable sort of metrics.
Okay.
Measurable metric, I'm not sure that's a That's a lot of things to say. You know what I mean?
I know what I mean.
So they're like easy to read, 5 or 10 pages on how you can measure. For instance, like, you know, you should aim to have at least half of all your posts should have a reply. You know, you should aim to have this many public messages, because this is what the 80% of our benchmarking, sorry, this is what the top 20% in our benchmark have achieved. So you can do it too. I think those what good looks like guides are would be useful as well, I hope.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that you've been extremely generous, both with your time today and the insights that you've given us, but also with those links as well. So I'll find those links or maybe ask you or one of your team to send those to, so I don't get the wrong ones. But look, Kai, that has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, I really value content and conversations like this, because I think it's definitely something that the audience and listeners are interested in. I know it is. I know so many organizations who I come across, who I work with, who are using these platforms and, you know, want to use them better, because as we've identified in the current climate and going forward, these are critical tools that we need to get better at, and we need to be more smart in the way that we use them. So I know what you've talked about will definitely resonate, and there's a couple of other opportunities that I'll talk with you afterwards where I think you can share these insights as well, which I think will be extremely useful. I'm just really grateful, Kai, and thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
I hope you're safe and well in Copenhagen, and that you get back to Australia as soon as you want to, and away from the cold, and get back to the sort of perpetual warmth that we all perceive Australia to be, which I'm sure it isn't. But well, yeah, thank you. But anyway, look. That's been fantastic, Kai. Maybe and certainly between you and I, first of many conversations, and maybe also with our listeners as well. So thank you very much.
It has been a most pleasant experience. Thank you very much, Craig.
Thank you, Kai. I'm conscious that not everybody who listens to this podcast will be involved in this area, but one of the areas we've been working in a lot recently is in helping organizations to improve their health and safety cultures. We found that it's one of those areas that typically relies on fairly conventional ways of communicating and training people, often relying on classroom-based training or other methods that are really more one-way communication or one-way training or one-way flow of information, very much driven around compliance rather than building commitment and culture change within the organization. So we've developed an approach at the Big Picture People that organizations that we're working with, some big multinational organizations, are now using and finding really helpful and useful in terms of transforming the way that they communicate and train their people on health and safety issues. And we're looking at here, as I said, at a kind of more strategic cultural issues rather than just transactional, you know, processes and procedures. So I thought it would be useful for you to know that we're running a webinar on the February the 18th, 2021. It's a free webinar, which you can come along to at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, UK time, and you're more than welcome to attend. The webinar is available. You can sign up for it at the following web address. So it's www.safetygame.co.uk. So that's www.safetygame.co.uk. Not the safety game, but just safety game. And at the bottom of that page, you can sign up for the webinar there. It's a Zoom webinar that we're running, and you'll be more than welcome to come along. If that's not an area that you're particularly interested in, or it's not a part of your remit, but you do have someone in your organization who's working in specifically in health and safety, or in particularly learning and development or communications when it comes to health and safety, I think you might find it quite useful, or they will find it quite useful. So please feel free to pass the details on to them as well. Okay, so thank you very much for listening to that, and hopefully if it's not of interest directly to you, there will be someone you know who may benefit from it. Thank you. So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show and any questions, ideas, or feedback that you'd have. Anything you'd like us to cover on future episodes too, please. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up to our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show and anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it directly via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review, and also if you could leave some verbal feedback there as well, not just stars. That's always nice to know that we've been appreciated, and particularly how we've helped you. If you know anyone else who might like the show or might benefit from it, please tell them, please share it with them, please share the link to our website, engagingic.com. And that would be great, because we want to grow our community. We want to get as many people involved in the show as possible. And the bigger, the better. Okay, thank you.